following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. The World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall.
Now up on episode 43 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast, we are talking with the executive director of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and Museum based in Stillwater, Oklahoma, a town this man knows very well, not because he lives there, but because he had quite an athletic career there. Mr. Leroy Smith, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jason. Good to be with you.
We are coming off a spectacular weekend for celebrating the great sport of wrestling as it happened Honors Weekend, the first weekend of June 2017, with four great distinguished members going in, a quality official, the awards with Outstanding American, Order of Merit, the Medal of Courage, and as well as the Dave Schultz and Tricia Saunders High School Excellence Awards. And Leroy, this Honors Weekend really has kind of taken on kind of a mind of its own or a will of its own in the last couple of years, especially around the renovation, which now we're in the second year since the hall has been renovated there in Stillwater. What does Honors Weekend mean to you as the person who is the figurehead, the leader of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame?
Well, it means enshrinement. I mean, it represents our sport's heritage and its history, and it's where we try and make sure that the legends live on in our sport. So each year we get to induct a new class and add to that heritage and that vault of history that we have here. So it's a very exciting time, and there's nothing like it. And the individuals we get to honor that are selected each year for enshrinement, they have a great story. And they obviously have achieved extraordinary success or in the case of, say, a Medal of Courage recipient, used the traits that they've learned from wrestling to conquer some unbelievable odds in life. And so it's just a real joy to be a part of that kind of an occasion.
What is it about the Honors Weekend itself that is special to you, not as a figurehead for the organization, but as a wrestling person?
Oh, I think it's the joy that you get to see from the honorees when, you know, the spotlight that gets put on them, their capsule of time is being featured in such a way that will inspire future generations, and they get it. Now, it takes them a while. After a day or two they've been here, it starts to sink in, and they realize that they're in a very special elite group of people, and it just watching them and their families get this deserved recognition in such a respectful and first class way is very special. And it's what, you know, it's what our founders intended. It represents that our history is something very valuable to our culture and preserving our culture in the sport of wrestling. And, you know, we have to think that wisdom, that foresight, that interest in those founders and everybody that's been with this organization from a leadership standpoint and from a stakeholder standpoint, from a funding standpoint, who've contributed to the sustainability of such an institution and realizing how important it is to the sport. But they get it. These honorees, they get it when they come here and they get to be enshrined. And that's, to me, just the way they the experience they have is just so well worth it. It's the highlight of my year.
Let's go back in time a little bit. Is the National Wrestling Hall of Fame just again celebrating its 41st year? Those of you who are familiar with the state of Oklahoma, it sits pretty much on campus of Oklahoma State University. If it's not on campus, it's as close as you can get to campus without being on campus, because Bennett Hall sits right across the street. Hall of Fame cuts right through next to Boone Pickens Stadium and Gallagher Iba Arena. So from a wrestling standpoint, there's a lot of orange that infiltrates itself through the veins of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. But let's just get a little bit of backstory on how you ended up at the Hall of Fame. Most people know that you were a coach at Arizona State prior to coming to the Hall of Fame. But from a professional development standpoint, what made you consider the Hall of Fame as an ideal place to continue your wrestling career, but more an administrative type of role?
Right. Well, I had left Arizona State in 2001 to pursue development career in fundraising, philanthropy, that type of work, and had gone to Arkansas to lead a campaign and a development program there at Subiaco Abbey and Academy. It's a Catholic school and a prep school. And then after a couple of years there, I went to the University of Florida Foundation in Gainesville, Florida. Was part of a billion-dollar capital campaign, and then all of a sudden got the call from Stillwater that Myron Roderick had a stroke, and they were going to need new leadership here. So I had accepted it, that position at that time, and thought it'd be good to head back to Oklahoma. I'd been away for 19 years, and it just came at the right time, we came back, and my wife and our two daughters and we settled in here and with the Hall of Fame, and it was a good fit for me, given the kind of skill sets that you need to operate a nonprofit institution like the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, having some awareness about the sport and its heritage, and being, you know, being able to be the diplomat you must be as a representative of such an institution, and being impartial when you need to be impartial. I mean, that is something that the Hall of Fame is prides itself on, and has good reason and a good history of being impartial about the way it recognizes people and even displays the sport's heritage within our museum. It is on a successful wrestling campus, but there's not much orange and black in here. It's colorblind as far as that goes. It represents the national wrestling culture in the United States and history, heritage of wrestling in this country and beyond. And as we partner with United World Wrestling as well, it's where the USA Wrestling was the new era of USA Wrestling, because it was the United States Wrestling Federation and the Hall of Fame were founded together here and had offices here when this place was built in 1976, and then they won the right, the Federation won the right to become seated as the national governing body, and thus became USA Wrestling in the early 1980s. Well, in the latter part of the 80s, in about 1987, they moved to Colorado Springs and the United States Olympic Committee and the Hall of Fame. And we, the Hall of Fame took over the entire building. And of course, we had a major renovation a year ago, as you alluded to earlier in the program. And now we're almost 16,000 square feet of space devoted to the museum and the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and what's interesting about all that is there were some discussions about two members at USA Wrestling that were actually employees in that building in Stillwater, and even before the renovation and the new entryway, it was still in there in stone. United States Wrestling Federation was in the way in the building was built. So Gary Abbott, as many people know, is the kind of the czar of wrestling PR. He's been at USA Wrestling for as long as the building has been there, and Mary Beth Powers, they're the two longest employees at USA Wrestling. They both started their careers in that building before heading to Colorado Springs. So a little side note there, but as it relates to the Hall of Fame, and you talked about Myron Roderick and his stroke that led to this situation. What was it like for you to kind of come in behind a guy you'd obviously had some experience and for lack of a better term, maybe some reverence for in your lifetime and in your career? What was it like to try to follow his footsteps in that regard?
It was a little intimidating, to say the least, because Myron was from an era that where leadership, that they were almost, I like to call them lions, and they could lionize a goal, an objective, or a cause, and really take a hold of it and lead it to complete success and completion. And where over time we found that you have to yet he was able to also work with others and get them inspired and get them on board. And there were several collaborators around the country at that time that envisionaries, people with vision that understood a Hall of Fame would be a great place for not only a great place, but a great idea for the sport of wrestling. And they made it happen. And you have to give him and them a lot of credit, those founders and those individuals who were part of the first class of inductees. Those guys really made this place work. And so from that, it was it was a real privilege to get to follow in what he had helped build. And I can tell you that everything we've done since the time I've came here, we've been able to build on those solid foundation that he had left, and that those people like Myron and Bob Dillinger, and then all the volunteer presidents and board members who've helped mold and shape this organization, of which are many, and they really put a very, there aren't many things that we've had to just do away with, or that just are no longer relevant. They put very good things into place and strategies and concepts that we're still building upon, able to build upon. And yes, there are new things that we bring upon, we bring on, and we to try and make the Hall of Fame and the museum and the sport more relevant. But a lot of that has to do with technology that's just transforming our day and age, right? So it's been a real privilege to follow in the kind of leadership that this Hall of Fame provided the sport of wrestling.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about the structure of the Hall of Fame in terms of this is a nonprofit organization. There is a board of governors. There is a president of that board of governors. You are the executive director that, I guess, in for lack of a better term, you answer to that board of governors. Am I on track here?
That's correct.
All right.
Absolutely.
So
yes.
When this structure happens, one, what type of people are board members? What's it take to be a board member? And then how does all that function when it comes to getting the nomination process for whether it be a distinguished member or somebody nominated for the Order of Merit? How does all that work?
Well, we have a board of governors that is responsible for the organization, for its status as a nonprofit organization that's registered with the IRS. And they have a fiduciary responsibility to be right by the organization and help it succeed. And they have the powers to hire and fire an executive director. So I work on behalf of that board of the board of governors, and we have and it's a large board. So it's most of our board members they're from all over the country, from the East Coast, the West Coast, and everything in between. We're allowed up to 30 members. 30 board members, but we only generally keep on around 25. But we're always looking for new board members, and we're looking for people that have the means, have the experience to help us move the organization in a positive way forward, of course. And with that, we have several committees that do the work of the organization. And the executive committee is a group of about 10 individuals who make up our executive committee. And I make an 11th member of that executive committee, although technically I'm not on the executive committee, but I serve as a representative of the staff on the executive committee. Now, they do a lot of the work because our board only meets three times a year, our full board. And then our executive committee meets about once every 6 to 8 weeks via phone when we're not meeting in person during those three times a year. And then we have all the committees that are in our structure to carry out the mission of the organization. And a lot of those, and all of our board members are volunteers with the exception. We have 7 staff members who are paid, and they are staff members of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. Our national board members are volunteers, and most of our committee members are volunteers, and they have staff liaisons that help them administer the committees and their work. One of those committees has to do with the selection of our awards, our national awards. Then we have state chapter awards, and having the Dan Gable Museum now as one of the assets of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, everything that they do with recognition, it falls under this umbrella of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. But to get to your point about, you know, how it's structured, how, for example, our National Honors Weekend honorees are selected. There's a screening. There are screening committees for each category. So we have distinguished members. We have officials. An official gets selected each year. A Order of Merit person gets selected each year. A Medal of Courage and an Outstanding American. Each of those have separate committees, and distinguished member, which everybody's most concerned about, those are typically those are going to be a coach or a wrestler or a contributor who have had extraordinary success in the sport of wrestling or helping the sport of wrestling develop and realize its potentials as a contributor. So the distinguished member committee has a screening committee, and then that screening committee narrows a select group of nominees down to and then that to a number that let's say roughly 20 individuals who will go on a ballot to the selection committee. And there's about a dozen members on each committee, and they're different. The screening committee is different from the selection committee. And the selection committee, and they're all from all over the country, and they represent quite an array of wrestling constituencies, from referees to USA Wrestling to the Coaches Association to the NCAA to a whole variety, or maybe they're former honorees that have been inducted. So it's quite a diverse group, and yet a group that has real stakeholder interest in this institution and in the selection of these kinds of candidates. So it's quite a process, and the selection committee they vote, and however they come in, you know, the top two from we have a modern era, a veterans era, and the veterans era are those that are 60 years and older. And now we're looking in the modern era to add a women's, we are adding a female category slot for a distinguished member that can be elected from our pool of female candidates, which is growing significantly as the sport continues to deepen its roots and produce exceptional wrestlers and coaches who've contributed to the sport as to women's wrestling and have been great female wrestlers.
Yeah, and that was something that just got passed this year, and I know you were excited about it. It was something right at the moment where it happened. We're like, well, we can't release this just yet, but this was something that the discussions with people around the hall, we're already starting to spitball. We'll go, who would be the first? I mean, Trisha Saunders right now is the only woman as a distinguished member. But as we started just spitballing names, it's like it's not going to be very hard to throw names up on that slab of granite each year moving forward.
No, it won't be. And I don't want to get into the names at this time, but prior to when when the screening and selection committees narrow them down, but they do have a pool of candidates that are credentialed and capable and deserving of being on the ballot and being inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, and it's only going to grow. We have our Helen, our first female Olympic champion, who's someday will be retiring. And there are a number of I think we can expect to see. We had world champions already this year, or rather after the Olympic Games. We had at least one, if I'm not mistaken, maybe two. A world champion in the fall of 2017 after the Olympic Games. So we're seeing these world and Olympic medalists every year now from the women.
As we also, you mentioned this earlier with the Gable Museum up in Iowa, that was a merger that took place a couple of years ago. Kyle Klingman's the director of that particular branch, and it as an extension of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, but with its own uniqueness, as the Glenn Brand Iowa Wrestling Hall of Fame is housed in that building, as is the Allen and Gloria Rice Greco-Roman Hall of Champions, and they have an annual banquet up here in Minnesota each year. And what's it mean to have that tied in, as well as they have a professional wrestling wing?
The foresight of some of our board members said, look, we need to embrace this museum that was in distress around 2010, and let's take it under the umbrella of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. And it's in when you look at history and heritage, the state of Iowa and the state of Oklahoma have the most heritage in the land. When it comes to excellence at the highest levels of our sport for the longest period of time. And so and let alone you have a figure like Dan Gable, who, you know, his reputation is beyond the sport. I mean, he is literally a folk hero in the United States of America. And there aren't many wrestlers in that category, if any, that have transcended the way he has beyond the sport of wrestling. So we decided to name it after Dan in his hometown, and that's where the museum was. And it made a lot of sense to us, and we've had we've enjoyed the relationship, and we've been able to manage the two museums so that and keep them in the black. It's a challenge. Can't say that it's not, but it is a challenge for us financially to sustain the two facilities. But they do a good job, and they have a unique set of awards and things that they feature. Particularly, it's more focused on the state of Iowa and what it is achieved. But then they have these national elements like Greco-Roman that they're able to focus on specifically, and professional a professional enterprise like pro wrestling and those pro wrestlers who have been former high school or collegiate or Olympic level wrestlers who've had success in that industry, much like our outstanding Americans here in our Hall of Fame. So we find it, and it's in a great place within the Midwest, in location wise, and within Big Ten country, if you will, our super conference in the sport of wrestling. So from a business standpoint, it makes a lot of sense to us, and I think with our new strategic plans and our new strategic goals and how to leverage our museums and our halls of fames, we're going to be able to tell our story better and showcase it in more media, if you will. And that only helps educate a society that is not very aware about this sport. The wrestling community is, but you get outside the wrestling community and we quickly go down the list as to what is wrestling all about. But it doesn't take long to explain it and teach them. But, we have to be out there. We have to be in all channels of communication that is available to us today. And that takes technology, and that takes content and platforms, if you will, that we have at our museums here in Stillwater. And we're about to renovate the Dan Gable Museum. It's going to feature a spectacular training center. And what better place to have a training center? A lot of kids pass through that area for tournaments and for competitions, and we're going to be able to use technology to teach and to help wrestlers and parents and coaches. And we may be able to be working with some coaches associations like USA Wrestling has and like the NWCA has to use that center to help them distribute that type of content as well. So those are just some examples of how very excited we are about leveraging our facilities, but we've got to equip them with technology and with ways of communicating and to the new generations of our time.
You mentioned the state chapter program earlier, and this is something that I've seen, especially maybe over the last 15 years, where when I was living in Virginia, we had this big banquet. It was a state chapter, and it was a big formal thing. It had the National Wrestling Hall of Fame logo, and it was kind of confusing for somebody who didn't know what it was all about. So to basically explain what the state chapter program is, of course, Krista Graf heads this up and does a tremendous job. But so when somebody says they're going to a state chapter function, they're going to a National Wrestling Hall of Fame banquet, or the state chapter of Pennsylvania or Virginia, where I'm from, or up here in Minnesota, what does that all entail, and how do the state chapters work together in terms with the larger hall? And I guess maybe one of the important things for people to understand is if you're in a state chapter, you're also going to be recognized by the national hall as well.
Right. And thanks for bringing that up, Jason. I didn't bring it up earlier, I don't think, but I'm glad you did, because we have really three tenets that make up the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. There's the National Hall here, and those national honorees during Honors Weekend that we recognize. And then there's the Dan Gable Museum and its work and those individuals and categories that they recognize. And then there's the state chapters. Now, the state chapters was founded in the early 1990s. The National Wrestling Hall of Fame only recognized distinguished members up until the early 1990s. So from 76 to the early 1990s, we didn't really recognize any other categories in the sport, or let's say constituencies of the sport, people that make up the sport and make it what it is. Well, they had the great vision, people like Myron and Tony Linville and Stan Zimmer and a number of people who were on the board at that time had developed the state chapter concept that said, hey, let's go into the states and get them associated with the Hall of Fame at the grassroots level. What better way to promote the Hall of Fame than to reach down into those people in states and in communities that really make up our sport at the base level, and so at the youth levels. And that's where it kind of originated from. And since then, it's it doesn't really recognize wrestling accomplishments. We only do that at the national. We want to preserve that for the best of the best. And that's what we represent here. And that's why we want to keep that these distinguished members the greatest heroes of our sport. And yet we have these state honorees that are a part of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame because of what they've done from a lifetime of service to the sport. And those are individuals who have given 20 years or more of service to the sport. And that does not include having been a wrestler. The competition part of it as a wrestler does not have anything to do with getting that 20 years of service. That all has to come through your work in the sport other than that as a wrestler. So it's been extremely successful for us, and we have over 30, we're trying to get to 35 chapters now. I have, you know, with Krista Graf's leadership, we have a female at the helm now, which is there was a little apprehension out there in our world we are pretty much as far as recognition goes, we're still recognizing most of those who contributed to the sport who were all male, 98%, 99% male, but that's changing now, and we're getting more females, and we have a female at the helm of leading our volunteers from the national office, and Krista Graf, who grew up in a wrestling family. Her father and brother wrestled, and at any rate, we're going to get that thing to 40 chapters in a matter of years, in my opinion, and she is certainly going to achieve that goal and is doing very well with the program, and as are the many volunteers who operate these programs at the state level. And as you've been to one, you know, I mean, we've been able to hone these programs, these induction ceremonies, these banquets in a very special way. We can make the honoree feel very special. They get nice awards and they get their name in the Hall of Fame, the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. It's in the state chapter area of our Hall of Fame, which is right there with all of our other national honorees that are enshrined in the Hall of Fame, in the same area of the museum, of the building, what we call the Hall of Fame area. There's a museum area of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and Museum, and then there's a Hall of Fame area, and the state chapters are in that area. And you can testify what it was like to go to Virginia, your home state, and be honored for a lifetime of service, and how that program was managed, how it operated. I'm not going to put any words in your mouth, but I just have to believe it was special.
It was, the point of this question wasn't about me, but I did go through this process. One at covering this as a journalist, you know, 15 years ago, watching Keith Lawrence and Frank Lapoli and Jim Casey and all those guys from Virginia go in, and knowing that, you know, the state chapter director there, Nancy Perry, I went to high school with her kids, and, you know, so it was a family thing before it was even a family thing. But I can tell you this, from a state chapter situation, how Virginia wants to do it, they want it super formal. I mean, I had to get a tuxedo, and I actually tied my own bow tie, staring at YouTube for like 30 minutes trying to get this thing done. And it was, you're right, it's an event, and it's formal. And, you know, from a Virginia standpoint, Mike and Gray tried to keep us to our 5 minute, speech, but it's something. I can tell you this, when I went back into Stillwater Honors Weekend a couple weeks later, and it wasn't just me that were coming in there looking at their name on the wall. Roosevelt Hadley, the head coach at Arkansas Baptist, is in there, and he's looking at his name, gets a picture next to his name. And the old Hall of Fame before the renovation, they were placards kind of spread out in the back corner of the building. Here, as you said, it's in the Hall of Fame section. You can have, you know, if the state chair has put the picture up, you sit there, and there's the state chapter display, and you can stand there, and there's you with your display. It's like your own individualized display. So those of you in the state chapters or active in the state chapters that haven't been to Stillwater, that is one thing that, shameless self-promotion aside, it's really freaking cool to see. And, you know, even at my young age, it's, as far as wrestling goes, I'm looking at it going, man, it is really cool to have that picture in that bio right there.
Well, it you're right. And the experience that I think is just the authenticity of the makeup of this institution and what it's trying to produce is, you know, it's something that is really special, and it is just, I don't know how else to say it. It's hard to put into words, but
it's awesome. That's the word you use. It's awesome.
It is, and it's you know, it is exactly what why wrestling in this country deserves a more prominent role, and whatever that means, you know, we have to try and help society understand what it is, that why it needs wrestling and why it's important to our communities and to our country. And no better way than to take those individuals that we recognize and their stories and get them out in front of them, because, you know, it is what is common about what makes this country great.
Now,
congratulations.
Circling back on the whole renovation part of it, in the past, for those who have been there and haven't been there since the grand reopening in 2016, you walk in and the first thing that used to hit you in the face was the giant statue and the old singlets and the ASICS All-America team, which is something that, again, it's one of those things where you walk in and you feel like if you know somebody on that wall, you feel that you have a connection to the hall. A couple of my high school teammates were listed on that ASICS first, second, and third team throughout the course of the time. So I'm like, okay, that's gay. Pocosin, Virginia, right there. You know, just happy to be there. Now when you walk into the Hall of Fame, you have a gorgeous open floor plan where the exhibits can change. And just talk about what the renovation has allowed the hall to do instead of saying, all right, we got a lot of stuff and a lot of names on the wall, and it never changes.
Right. Right. Well, we certainly think of it in terms of a platform. I mean, there are a number of different platforms. There's the youth area. There's the collegiate area. Just like a typical stepping stone in the sport of wrestling, you go from youth to college to the international levels, and we have these wings, if you will, these galleries of those age groups, and then we have timelines of what has been special about a decade, an era of wrestling, and that stands out the most and has made the sport what it, you know, helped contribute to the advancement of the sport. And then we have things like all sorts of memorabilia and artifacts that we've been able to collect for over 40 years. Now, those were 40 years of collecting 100 plus years of memorabilia and artifacts from some of the greatest of all time. And so we have this wonderful vault of memorabilia and artifacts to display, but we can't put it all out or it would just overwhelm you. And it would also take away a little bit from making anything pop out and stand out. So we've been able to put, you know, we're able to rotate things now. And we have the touch screen, so we're able to load content, be it photos, be it videos, be it bios, statistics, to and even live footage of wrestling to help tell the story of honorees that we recognize. Or in some cases, they can come in and watch all the NCAA finals, or they can watch in time. We're preparing for to put Olympic and World Championship videos in the kiosk. So the technology age is here now, and accessible, and pretty soon it's all going to be online as well, and. So that's going to be, that's a very challenging but exciting, task ahead of us. And we're really looking forward because we think we're going to really contribute to the, helping broaden awareness for the sport of wrestling in a inspirational way. And so that's what we have here now. We have certainly an inspiring. We had a group of officials in this afternoon who are from all over the world, and I can tell you they were from Australia. They were from all over Europe, and they're in Tulsa at the Junior World Duels, or not Junior World, but Junior Duels, and they're there for a clinic of some kind at for UWW, United World Wrestling, has a clinic there for officials. And they were just taken away. They could not believe it. They were so proud of the sport of wrestling, of coming here and being a part of this, learning about it. Just they just couldn't believe it. And there's no other place like it in the world. So that's what we want. That's what our board wants. That's what our leadership wants. That's what everybody in the sport really wants. And I'm just proud to be able to say that we're able to produce that, and deliver it. And we've got a lot of work ahead now that, you know, it's one thing to have the building and have the museum, but it's another thing to execute, how to get it out to more people. And that's what we're working on now.
We can't talk about the Hall of Fame and not mention, with the renovation now, there's the opportunity to have it used as banquet space to for the local Chamber of Commerce. So even people that it's kind of hard to not know wrestling if you live in Stillwater or the surrounding area, but they're an opportunity to expose the sport of wrestling and its history to business people that may not have that direct tie with the sport of wrestling. And we can't not mention people like Megan Caulfield, who's the office manager who helps open the doors and make sure everybody is organized when they come in. Jack Carnifix, the operations manager, he's been a great addition in the 2 years he's been there. And I want to talk about Jack and his role just a little bit, because what you have here is a guy who's not from wrestling, although he knows Stillwater and he knows sports, but he's brought a non-wrestling minded mind, for lack of a better term, to the Wrestling Hall of Fame. What's it like to have Jack on board?
Well, what that has demonstrated is that, you know, Jack comes from a media world, and he comes from journalistic background and communications background, and you know, there's a lot of specific skill sets now that are required to really communicate and effectively operate an enterprise like the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. And we're really going into an era of technology that is going to require some really specialized skill sets. I'm very excited, you know, with the work that Jack's doing and helping us with on social media, for example, being able to leverage social media as a way to connect with more people is, you know, it goes without saying how important that is. And, you know, we're able to take our, you know, I'm excited that we had, our crew that worked on Krista and Jack and Bob Buckley from Waterloo, Iowa, and others who helped us design our Museum of the Future. We have exhibits like Sport for All, and that came out of the UWW's effort to, for the most part, to get wrestling back in the Olympics. Well, we have been constantly promoting how wrestling is, we used to have in this country for the longest time, anybody can wrestle, a slogan of how diversified wrestling is and how inclusive it is. And we have these exhibits on these character traits that are most important in what you will realize by participating in the sport. Things like commitment and perseverance and responsibility and sacrifice and discipline and honor. And here we have these character traits and what a diverse and inclusive sport this is. And then we can point down to the other end and say, and over there in that Hall of Fame, that's what they all have in common. They were inclusive-minded people, and they are they came out of this through this sport and with the kind of character traits that allowed them to be successful, and some and extremely successful in other walks of life. And the reason I bring that up is because we're in an era, particularly with women's wrestling on as an emerging sport in America. It's so important that we all get behind this evolution, because it's how the sport of wrestling is going to grow. There is, we've been able to promote the values of wrestling, and probably is one of the most highest values, is that it is an inclusive sport. In the 1928, when it became an NCAA sport, Teddy Roosevelt and the rest of the NCAA had other choices, but they chose wrestling because it was so inclusive in that it had a spot for anybody. And it needs to be that way going forward, particularly as we embrace female wrestling, because it is going to help our sport grow. And there's nothing like growth that can make you relevant. And we want to see wrestling be relevant for generations and generations into the future.
And if you're listening and you make your way to Stillwater, Oklahoma at 405 West Hall of Fame Avenue, you can check the hours on the website at nwhof.org. If you're in Waterloo, Iowa, and you want to check out the Gable Museum, that is at 303 Jefferson Street in Waterloo. You can stop and say hi to Kyle Klingman while you're at it. And Leroy, just any final things that the Hall of Fame represents or you want to get across to people that may have never made the trip either to Waterloo or Stillwater, and maybe entice them to come to an honors weekend and have an opportunity to meet wrestling's heroes. Even though I cover these guys, it was a thrill for me to watch one of my early favorite wrestlers, Kerry Colak, go in this year. And, you know, you get kind of giddy as a wrestling fan to see that. I mean, what is something, what's your elevator pitch to get people to come to Stillwater if just for a trip or not? Let's circle that first weekend of June on your calendar each year for honors weekend.
Well, circle that or circle a state chapter event. Go to our website, get familiar with our website, and join us on social media. Become part of the Hall of Fame family. We'll lead you to ways that connect you to the sport that are not just every now and then, but there's something going on all the time. And we like to say this is where wrestling never stops here at the Hall of Fame. And we can show you how that works and lead you to something exciting about the sport in all parts of the country and in your in who's who. So just join us on our website, on social, or come visit us in person.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.